Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sifloication Conflagration. Here are your two amazing hosts, Nate Bradford and Stephen Ronquillo. Guys, take it away!
Are we back? Are we back? Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Are we back?
I don't know. Are we back? Yeah. I actually paid the back rent on the studio that I forgot to pay. Sorry, folks.
You and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I will be 100% upfront about it for our fans. We really do appreciate everyone who listens, whether you tune in live or whether you download the episodes later. We really do appreciate it, and we do try to, even though it's just kind of two dudes goofing around about movies and music and all that stuff, we do appreciate everyone listening. And we did have a bit of a hiccup over the last month, and I will fully admit, as all of you know, I joke about it a lot on the air, but I do have issues with drugs and alcohol, and I was in rehab, and hopefully it takes this time. This is the third time I've been to rehab, and I can occasionally stay sober here and there, but... Yeah, there you go.
Let's do it. 8 miles an hour.
Yeah, so Steven and I both bought some new equipment for the podcast, and I'm in my office as always. But Steven, why don't you tell the folks what you're doing tonight with your new podcast equipment?
Well, I'm sitting outside on the porch because my room, I need to get Internet pod booster for my room because the walls are concrete because whoever built this house did not know what he was doing.
Well, to be fair, when that house was built, the internet probably was not a thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, they probably never planned on having to have internet access in your house.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about tonight, Stephen? Are we back?
Well,
we are back, right?
It's been a rough three weeks. I mean, we lost, this week, Clarence Williams III died.
Yes.
And.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably would know him from the Mod Squad, but he was always in the cool movies. Like, one of my favorite stories was about, remember when Vanity Prince's protege went sober and did that tell-all book?
Oh,
he said that on the set of 52 Pickup, Clarence Williams III scared her in one scene so badly, and it's pretty easy to tell that she actually pissed her pants.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny for a different reason. I'll get back to Clarence in a second, but I recently got a promotion at work, and so as part of this promotion, I have to start working nights again, which it feels kind of like a downgrade to me. I was working Monday through Friday, no nights, no weekends, no holidays, which, you know, is important to me because I am a stand-up comedian. So, but the other night I did go out and do a job with two other dudes, and one of the guys pissed his pants while we were at work. It doesn't have anything to do with Clarence Williams III per se, but just because you mentioned someone pissing their pants, like for real, dude, like it wasn't like some young dude or some old guy. Like, you know me, I'm almost 50. Everyone I work with is that same, same age group. And all of a sudden one dude just pissed himself, but he didn't even really seem to acknowledge it. He just kind of pissed himself and was like, all right, guys, let's get back to work.
What's the difference between 20 and 50? When you're 20, that's a humorous story that you tell each other and laugh and enjoy. But when you're close to 50, you're like, oh, God, did they see? Should I get some Depends?
Right.
You're right. 52 pickup, haven't you? With Roy Scheider?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He was scary as hell in that movie.
Yeah. I don't know. He had kind of a strange career because, like you say, Mod Squad, you know, like, and people who, you know, younger listeners might be more familiar with the Mod Squad, the remake, but we're talking about the original Mod Squad from the 1960s.
Yeah. The weird part was he did Mod Squad, the TV series. Then he basically vanished off the face of this earth until he reappeared as Prince's father in Purple Rain, the first movie he ever did.
Right. Was that the first one? Wasn't he in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker?
Yeah, but that was 90s.
That was after Purple Rain.
I confirmed it, but Purple Rain was the first one. He's only in two or three scenes, but God, is he good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Purple Rain is one of those 80s movies that's better than it has any right to be if you look at it on paper.
Yeah, it's also one of those movies like, I mean, obviously we're talking about the 80s tonight, and we're going to talk about movies, TV shows, actors, etc., as we always do. But, like, Purple Rain is one of those movies that, It does look good on paper because you got Prince in it, who was at the peak of his the peak of his success at the time, you know. But it's such an 80s. It's as much of an 80s movie as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 is a 90s movie. You know, it's like everything you could possibly think about the 1980s. Is crammed into Purple Rain, but yet for some reason it's still around and it's still enjoyable. Yeah, you know,
it's because of the live concert scenes. They filmed them as raw live concert scenes, so it has a flavor to it that you didn't get in most staged concert scenes.
Right. And then you and I talked about this a lot. Not on one of our podcasts, but I think in our blog, I think you and I wrote about 200 Motels, the Frank Zappa movie.
Yeah.
Which when we were talking about unfinished films, we wrote back and forth on our blog about 200 Motels. And even though that movie is it's a strange documentary, but the fact that a lot of that concert footage is raw footage of the Mothers of Invention, Frank Zappa, that gives a lot of verisimilitude to the movie that might have otherwise been lost if they had tried to do I don't want to say the Monkees, but you know, the Monkees did do a lot of like, you know, fake out kind of stuff, but the Monkees never really made a movie though, did they? That Head, I think, was the only movie that the Monkees were really ever involved
in. Well, in 99.34 revolutions per monkey, but Head was just an insane myth. It's just one of those things like, okay, we've been straight-laced for too long, so we will make the weirdest crap we're going to make. But, when I went and seen Purple Rain in the theaters, it was sold out, and people were dancing in the aisles. It was like they got carried away with the concert footage because that's the way they set up. I mean, let's look at the bird, the opening. You know, oh, you still got 2 minutes to get up and start dancing. If you ain't dancing, you can get out of here. Yeah, even if it is in a movie audience, you're like, whoa, God, I better start dancing.
Right? Purple Rain has kind of like a Rocky Horror Picture Show vibe, if you think about it now in the revival era of going to the theater, like, you know, or like The Room, you know, Tommy Wiseau's The Room, you know, like there are things that people react to viscerally and actively because they remember, you know, we think about like the Rocky Horror Picture Show was kind of designed that way. The Room just kind of became a joke in that vein, but Purple Rain really does like have some of that to it, you know, like there really was a vibe to it. It was
and Clarence Williams is only in it for maybe 3 or 4 scenes, but God, is he good. Especially at one scene where he's playing piano and showing his own song before he commits suicide.
Right.
And he talks to Prince's character.
Now, aside from the Mod Squad, which of course he had a major role in, and we're talking about Purple Rain, but I'm thinking about more of his films. He didn't really ever have a big part in anything else. I mean, most of his other stuff, I think, was as far as I can remember. And, you know, you and I do this show off the top of our head most of the time, and we try to remember and we try to remind one another.
Yeah.
But do you really remember anything else that he was in that where he had a bigger, the Mod Squad, obviously.
Tales from the Hood.
Tales from the Hood, yep. That was the one that was on the top of my head as well.
Yeah. He was the narrator, the storyteller, Mr. Sims. And he was shit in that movie.
Yeah.
I learned more ways to say the word shit from Tales from the Hood and him than anything. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
we're going to get it. We're going to get the shit. We're going to get the dude.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, even you growing up in the South, you probably learned more ways to say the N-word from Ralph Bakshi films than anything else.
Oh, Street Fight,
yeah.
We'll get to that another fight. Time.
Yeah, that's another time. We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah,
I'm just
Coonskin.
But yeah.
Yeah,
Coonskin, right, yeah.
He was
yeah.
also, let's see, he went from 52 Pickup where he stole the dang movie, of course.
Yeah.
And then I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, which had about everybody in it.
Yeah, yeah, I brought that up before. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, and Half Baked, but you were right. We were trying to talk more about 80s stuff,
about his film period, yeah. Clarence Williams, the 90s was really the decade he came out, because, let's see, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, Half Baked. He was hilarious as Samson. Always had his hair in colors.
Yeah.
Mama fell.
Right.
I told you not to let them bitch wear them bunny slippers anymore. What's wrong with you?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, bunny slippers. Wow.
And actually, this is funny because I was talking to my friend John earlier. My friend John came over earlier. We like to hang out and just listen to records. And we were listening to some old Jelly Roll Morton records, and he was like, oh, hey, didn't he was like, didn't the guy from the Mod Squad play Jelly Roll Morton in one of those movies? And I don't know. Like I said, this is how you and I bounce off of one another.
He was in Tales from the Hood, Hoodlum, and American Gangsta. But I bench those two together because he played the same role in both of them, which was Bumpy Johnson. I mean, do you remember watching American Gangster and just seeing that grin on Denzel's face, just listening to Clarence Williams talk about, look at this store, it's horrible. They just sell all this product. He's selling these washing machines and stuff. There's nothing personal about it.
Right? Yeah, I like I said, this was just a conversation I was having with my friend John, who, just like you and I, he's kind of a, you know, music, movie, TV nerd, and we were talking about it, and he was like, yeah, didn't he play Jelly Roll Morton in a movie? And I was like, I don't remember. I said, I'll talk to Stephen about it when we're on the air tonight. And
And he was also in, speaking of blues, I think he was in Mo Better Blues. I'm not sure, but I know that he was in Sugar Hill with Wesley Snipes, and he was great in that too.
Yeah, he was in a couple of wasn't Wesley Snipes also in Deep Cover, or was that? No, that was Lawrence Fishburne.
That's Lawrence Fishburne. That's my favorite one of his, because he took the whole role. Because in Bill Duke's original script, Clarence Williams III's character was supposed to be just your typical bad butt cop.
Right.
But he changed it with just taking one line, which was when he showed up and punched him in the belly, he was supposed to just fade to black. And he said, you're under arrest. But instead, he punched him in the belly and said, how you doing, Judas?
Right. Yeah.
And he changed his whole character into a Catholic. If you look at the scene where they interrogate, Lawrence Fishburne's sitting there like, what the hell's going on here?
That is a good rewrite, though. That's a good, I mean, I don't know if he ad-libbed it or if he actually said,
he ad-libbed it. He went to Bill Duke, he said, let me try something. He's like, okay. And then he punched him in the belly. He said, how you doing, Judas?
Boom. Right. That is a good rewrite. And you're right. It does change the character 100%. Well, I wouldn't say 100%, but it adds another layer to the character.
Cool. Then he starts talking about how he's a Christian, and he whips out his real wallet and shows him the picture of his actual kids. And he's like, if someone's putting a head to your beautiful African babies, wouldn't you get mad? He's like, don't cross me. I'm like a hung mad dog with a bone. I'll be on you like stink on doo-doo.
Kind of reminds me of the African American version hardcore. Who was in hardcore?
Oh, George C. Scott.
Yeah, George C. Scott. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that
hypocrisy.
Same kind of like. It reminds me of that same kind of like. Like you were saying, you know, like, hey, if this was your daughter, what would you do? You know? And I guess in some regard, that also kind of bleeds over into like Taxi Driver, you know, which. There's no reason to talk about Taxi Driver. It's been discussed exhaustively, but, you know, it's been
discussed. Yeah,
there's
so many theories about Taxi Driver that it ain't even funny. You know, it's
I know, right?
Yeah. The last 20 minutes is just a dream. Who cares?
Yeah, the other morning I was talking to Abby about Inception, just kind of randomly. I don't know how it came up. I haven't watched it recently or anything, but I was just kind of I was just kind of talking about Inception and just giving her my random theory about Inception, and she doesn't give a shit. Abby loves movies and TV. She loves all the same movies and TV shows as I do, but she's one of those, like, I can watch it once and I don't care anymore. You know, she's not like obsessive. Like she's not obsessive. You know, she's not obsessive like you and I are, where we'll, you know, like she finds no reason to purchase a film, you know, on DVD, Blu-ray, download it. She finds no reason to purchase a film. She figures between Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu and Shudder, you know, we've got everything that we need to just watch movies, and she doesn't give a shit about owning a movie so she can watch it over and over again. So whenever I start rambling on about things, she's just like, yeah, I don't care. So,
I'm sorry, but to me, Inception is one of those one-and-done movies. Are you there? Well, we lost Nate. He'll be back in a second. But, yeah, Deep Cover comes out next month from Criterion, and it is one of my favorites. As a matter of fact, I did a watch, and it's in the archives. Not if you're listening to this on Spotify. I need to upload it to Spotify before the DVD comes out, but I will be uploading some of the missing episodes that are not on Spotify on Spotify. And there he is.
Here I am.
Yeah, you get so obsessed with Inception that you just vanish.
Yeah.
I mean, you ran out of the street. Yeah, you ran out of the street with, I love Inception, and come back in the house.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I bought a new computer, and when I bought the computer, I specifically told the guy at Best Buy, I said, "Look, I'm like, all I do is look at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, my website. I jerk off to internet porn, and I have a podcast once a week. What can you sell me that will do all those things?" He sold me this computer. You know, I mean, obviously you and I do this podcast together, but I have a lot of other podcasts that I go on, and the same fucking thing happens all the time. I'll just be talking blah, 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 and then suddenly I'll be like, I'm not on the podcast anymore, am I? This computer sucks. I'm like, I have all the nice podcast equipment. I have an entire desk of shit set up here that's just specifically designed for all the different podcasts that I do, and it kicks me off all the time because this computer is a piece of shit. But anyway. Anyway,
well, I've got my ZenBook, HP, and my headset. That's all I need.
Well, that's
all I need.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing that pisses me off is, you know, we have like three laptops, like three tablets. We have, you know, cell phones, smart TVs. There are so many different ways that I could talk to you every Wednesday night. And I'm just like, well, I'm in my office. Here's my laptop. I'll just plug into this. And then we get shit like that where all of a sudden it just drops out for no apparent reason. So, I don't know.
But, yeah, all through the 90s, Clarence Williams was like one of those actors that you would always see in the supporting roles, and he'd always, like, steal the movie.
Yeah, yeah. He like, so many movies, he would have, like, one scene and then just, like, that's it. Or, like you said, even Tales from the Hood, which I was, like I mentioned before, he kind of plays like the Crypt Keeper character in Tales from the Hood, where he's linking all of the stories together. So,
yeah,
I mean,
I love it that, well, if you haven't seen it yet, you're about to be spoiled. He plays the devil in this movie, but it's basically like the first time he's done anything like this in forever. So when he gets hit, it's like the first time the devil's been hit in about 200-300 years. And he
right.
plays it that way.
And like you said, though, it was a really, like, it was kind of like a meta thing, because for him as an actor, it was one of the first times that he really had a major role in a film. And even though Tales from the Hood was kind of an underground, I don't know, you know, it's hard to describe underground nowadays. You and I obviously are.
It came out the same week as Friday, and all of the black audience went to Friday.
Right, right. But you know, like, you and I talk about this stuff all the time. Like, it's weird to kind of try to define underground filmmaking from the 90s on. Like, you and I talk a lot about like independent film in the 70s, independent film in the 80s, which we're obviously going to get into tonight some more. But like independent film in the 90s, a lot of it doesn't feel like independent films. It doesn't feel like,
yeah, like Tetsuo the Iron Man.
Right. Or you know, I'll throw it right out there. Everyone who listens to our show knows my favorite movie of all time is Pulp Fiction. That was marketed as an independent underground film. Fuck that, dude. That movie had more money. The budget on that movie was bigger than all 10 of John Carpenter's first movies combined. You know, like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, trying to say it's more independent than Clerks, which was basically he shot it with whatever camera he can afford by money that he was going to spend going to film school.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
or all the guys that are on SOBHorror.com for the 90s, like Rot, Deadbeat at Dawn, Darkness, Leif Janiker.
Yeah,
Shattered,
like
Ed. God, that's underground filmmaking, because you had to really look for that.
There's so many, like, are you shot on video, you know, stuff from the 80s, you said Deadbeat at Dawn. Wasn't Deadbeat at Dawn originally like shot on like one of those old big handheld VHS cameras and then edited together later? Like,
yeah, he shot it as a demo reel to show that he could shoot action. And then once he's seen it all the footage, he's like, okay, I'm going to film a little bit of this and that to put a plot into it. And we got Deadbeat at Dawn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Name
and
Tetsuo.
That's great...
It's not even 50 minutes, is it?
Tetsuo is not even an hour long. No way. No, I have it on some weird Asian DVD from 20 years ago, and it's
yeah. Back then we had to seek it out. We couldn't just go. Like nowadays, you can get the Arrow box set of it that has Tetsuo, Tetsuo 2, Burst City.
It's like the same thing talking about, just referencing like bizarre underground Asian horror films. It's like the guinea pig films, you know, like when we were young, if you wanted to find one of those guinea pig films, you had to find an advertisement. You and I have talked about this before. You have to find an advertisement in the back of film, underground film magazine that you bought at a store where most people just buy porno, but you happen to be there, find a copy of Film Threat and, you know, flip to the back and there's you can send away for a catalog and then you get the catalog and now you can get guinea pig, you know, like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And it would be
crazy.
A crappy copy, so it'd make it look better than if. That's one thing I appreciate Stephen Brio did when he put it out on the blue DVD box set, which is out of print now, which was he included Guinea Pig 2 in a beautiful,
yeah,
pristine copy, but he also put like a third generation PD dupe of it. So we could see, so people could see what the heck the uproar was.
Because
if you look
right,
at a good quality copy of it, you can tell that it's special effects. But when you got a crappy copy, you have to squint to see what the heck is going on.
Yeah, and see, that's the one thing that I always thought was strange about. So the whole guinea pig.
And again, his microphone has gone out. Let's see if I can fix it. Are you there? He got dropped out again. He went out and screamed in at his house, "By God, I love guinea pig." But yeah, I mean, it was hilarious. You've probably heard on this show, in other words, the stories before of people actually thinking that Guinea Pig was actually a real snuff film. When really the first two films were the only ones in the batch that would count as snuff, and the rest of them were more like disgusting gonzo fantasy films that weren't even involved in the guinea pig series, but the series was selling good, so they would just slap the guinea pig title on it to make money. Sitting in the morning sun. But yeah, I mean, it's hilarious how many myths and legends appeared because of how hard these movies were to find. Isn't that right, Nate?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, I've made a point of this multiple times, not only on our podcast, but other podcasts and on other, blogs and stuff that you and I have worked on before. Like, I was always obsessed with, finding the most disturbing films of all time. And like we were talking about before, like, you know, you had to go and actually search that stuff out. You had to go buy a copy of Film Threat and then find an advertisement in the back of Film Threat and then send away for a catalog and then get the catalog. And then you would get the, you know, you could find movies like, you and I have joked about this 1,000 times over the past 7 years, but you know, Solo was like so hard to find. Now it's on the fucking Criterion Collection. Like you can just go to Barnes and Noble and buy a copy of Solo on Blu-ray,
Solo,
you know,
come and see, the Serbian film you can go buy easily at Diabolik.
Man Behind the Sun. I mean, all these movies that when we were, I mean, Jesus Christ, You can watch Last House on the Left on friggin' Netflix now. And it's like, when we were growing up, people were like, oh, you can't watch Last House on the Left. It's going to be so, there's rape, there's murder. You're not, people get their dicks cut off. You're not going to be able to find this movie because this is a fucked up movie. Now it's like,
well,
I can
not
just
find it uncut. You could find, like, I have personally seen seven different cuts of Last House on the Left. The original cut VHS tape, the semi-cut VHS tape, the so-called unrated VHS tape, which had more footage back in, but it was unwatchable. The closest that we came to the uncut back then, which was the Canadian no credit cut.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah, it's remarkable how it's just remarkable how easily, and I know I don't want to be like the, okay, I'm 50 years old, I'm the grumpy old man, get off my lawn, but you and I, again, you and I have talked about this multiple times, not only on our podcasts, but on our blog and everything, just like, Jesus Christ, these kids don't realize how easy they have it nowadays, you know?
There was this term I've came up with to describe those films that we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes. I call them unseen classics, as in,
right,
they're classic films and beloved because no one's had a chance to really see them and see how they really are.
Right. All right. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah. I mean, but again, it goes back to what we were talking about before. A lot of those movies, it goes back to what we were saying before about low budget or what people consider low budget or independent films nowadays. I mean, you know, I watch a lot of stuff. You know, like I said, I have all the streaming services. I watch a lot of movies on Netflix and Hulu, Amazon Prime, Shudder, all that stuff. And, you know, you zoom in on like a strange, what seems to be like a strange underground horror film, like the kind of thing that you and I would have glommed onto when we were like, you know, 12 years old. But the production values are so high. I mean, you can film you can make a film on your iPhone nowadays, edit it on your computer, and it's going to look more beautiful than anything that you and I got to see when we were growing up. It not necessarily making it a worse film, but just making, you know, like it's just so high, everything just so high gloss, and ironically enough, we're like almost halfway through our show tonight. We haven't really started talking about the 80s, but in the 80s, when you and I were growing up and we were obsessed with these underground films and these horror films and stuff,
as Joe Bob called them, and I agree with them, the bottom feeder titles, which were the titles not because they were real bottom feeder films. It's just that the ones with the real horror fans that we would go to the video stores, they would have these titles on the bottom shelf to really show that this is the worst. You would see stuff like Blood Cult, Sledgehammer, a lot of shot on video drac.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's nothing really like that nowadays, even because, and I guess that was the point I was making before, there's no such thing as shot on video anymore. I mean, you know, I'm a huge tech nerd, so I have some of those old giant VHS recorders. I have old I can tape stuff on 8mm digital stuff. You know, I have all of that stuff, but you know, whenever I do a video, what do you think I reach for? I grab my friggin' iPhone or my iPad, or I just use the camera on my computer, you know? And it's like, so no matter what I'm aiming for, you know, I'm getting like this high digital, you know, high quality digital. And sadly, you know, like, and again, every week I mention how much I love Quentin Tarantino, but you know, when we watch something like Death Proof or, and as part of the, you know, Grindhouse, you know, all of that stuff with Machete and the Machete trailer, the, you know, like they make, that wasn't real, like gritty. It would, they did all that digitally, you know,
The one thing that everybody, including Tarantino and Rodriguez, screw up on is that, you guys were lucky. You got to see the movie for all that grit and grime. I was like, no, we seen the trailers. We seen the movie when they were brand new, and they look good. You know why? Because if a director would put out a movie with a crappy-looking quality print, they wouldn't get any more work.
Right?
Yeah.
But you and I have talked about this before. I get confused because we've done a ton of podcasts over the last 7 years, and we've done a bunch of stuff on the blog. I forget what we talk about where, whether it's us, you know, speaking back and forth or whether it's us writing together. But we've talked about, like the Chitlin circuit where they would, you know, when back when movies would actually be shipped around, like on film around the country.
And they would have like the wrestling territories, they would have different bookers for each section of the country.
Right. But the point I was trying to make was that, you know, when you got the film, it might have already been played in 30 different theaters, 40 different theaters. So by the time you got a copy, it might look like that, you know, the type of like phony stuff that Rob Zombie and Tarantino and Rodriguez were playing with when they did Grindhouse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but most of it, you would get a high quality trailer.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's true. Yeah. So, so you're thinking you would get a high quality trailer, but
yeah,
that's because the, because the trailers got played less, maybe?
No, it's because that's how they promoted the film. And they would always send out the trailers new. But then the people that would book the territories would know what type of movies would make money in their territory. So it would be like up north Maine. You wouldn't get stuff like the country, the country porn. The hillbilly
right,
porn
like,
that would play down south.
Yeah.
You would
yeah,
get
I wouldn't
stuff
get like,
that would play up there. So you wouldn't get prints of just any old film. You know, it would be like, what plays to my area? Nowadays, there is nothing as areas. So they will ship out films across the U.S. because in the theaters, the taste has gotten homogenized. There's no such thing as regional filmmaking anymore.
Yeah, that is 100% true. And I was thinking of the same thing. Like, but also, most every film that ships out now is digital. Like, do you have any theaters down in your area that still actually show like film? Like,
yeah, the drive-in.
Yeah, the drive-in shows actual film.
Yeah,
like because the drive, we have a lot of drive-ins up here in Maine, but they just do digital, you know, projection, which is nice. I mean, you get to see a lot of older films, again, from the 80s, which is what we were planning on talking about tonight. But you can go to the theaters here and watch, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark or Gremlins or something on the big screen at the drive-in. And
well, most of the drive-ins are shipping out the new Conjuring with Creepshow as the second feature.
Yeah, I would see that. I would watch that. I've never watched any of the other Conjuring films, but the preview for that new Conjuring film does actually have me intrigued. So
they are pretty good. I've liked them all so far.
I wouldn't call them
classics, but I've liked them. Good popcorn fodder.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not, and I do like the actors that are in the films are actors that I enjoy. What's the main lead male actor in there? He was in Watchmen. He played the owl.
Dr. Manhattan.
No, you're right.
He played Owlman.
He played Owlman. Yeah. So I do, and I have seen him in other films, and I do like him as an actor. But I don't know. It's a weird thing for me watching modern horror films, especially as I've mentioned already multiple times this evening. Abby and I have so many streaming services that
it's too much. It's too easy, and there's too much product nowadays to really go hog wild like we used to back in the old days.
Yeah, well, you know, this is kind of funny because this brings me back to actually about almost what I was just about to say. When we were growing up, and I'm sure you were the same way when you were growing up, so now I live in this giant house and we have TVs in every fucking room of the house. Like, I'm not kidding. The kitchen, the living room, Abby has her office, I have my office, we have the bedroom. Like, we have like 9 smart TVs in this house. We have tablets, we have laptops. We we have every streaming service, and we have DVDs, we have VHS. I have 9 fucking VCRs, Steven. I have 9 VCRs. Do you know anyone else who has 9 VCRs? We have 4 record players. Who has records anymore? We do. We have hundreds of them. So, like, any place
you can
you
buy
go
records
in my house,
in Walmart, vinyl has really come back to stay.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah. But the point that I'm making is anywhere you go in my house, there is some entertainment to be had. I mean, Christ, I didn't even finish. We have Betamax. We actually have an 8mm film. Like you can play 8mm, 16mm, 32mm film. We have a screen in one of our room. Like, I'm telling you, man. The only type of fun you're like David Bowie
in that one scene with the man who fell to earth.
Yes, Stephen, I am the man who fell to earth.
And the scene that I'm talking about where David Bowie is sitting in his chair watching like 32 TVs at once, you know.
Our Beagle alert. I hear her. No, all of our stuff is, we at least have all of our stuff separated into separate rooms. So
yeah.
We're not, but there is a very real danger. There is a very real danger that at some point you might just see me sitting on a couch. You're going to come visit, and I'll be sitting on a couch with, like, all 32 screens in front of me. You know.
And I'll be sitting there, need more.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll come to visit, and I'll be like, oh, Steven, thank you so much. Did you bring me another television?
Yeah.
No, Nate, I'm here to take you to the hospital. You have completely and totally lost your mind. Oh, really?
You fried your brain.
Or do I just need another television?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand. They say kids only watch like 5 minutes of movie nowadays. With all the choices they have, I can understand that. It's really hard to settle down and watch a movie when you have like 20 or more so that you can just get in an instant. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a real my real problem is and I know this does have to do with what I was talking about at the top of the program. You know, I'm almost 50 years old. I fully admit that I have drug and alcohol issues, but you know, I've been so successful as a writer and stand-up comedian and, you know, an actor.
A pornographer.
Pornographer. Yeah, I've done it all. I've done it all, you know. So it's one of those strange things where I'm like, I know that my lifestyle isn't healthy, but I'm so successful that I don't, you know, like people usually talk about, I haven't hit rock bottom, so I'm not gonna do anything about it. And that's a very real, thing. We make a lot of jokes about it. I don't mind you kidding me about it. I don't mind our listeners joking about it. I make jokes about it, obviously. As I said, I'm a successful stand-up comedian.
What scares me is that the DVD buying crowd now has gotten to the point where they care more about the bells and whistles than the fucking movies.
Right, right.
But like someone got the, I seen on a group, someone's talking about, oh, I got the new scanner cup set. I love the slip cover on it, but the inserts need slip covers too, so they won't get any little tiny scratches that will annoy me.
Right. I mentioned earlier that my friend John came over, and when he comes over, we usually listen to records, but you know, we're both vinyl nerds. So he brings his records over and we're listening to vinyl, and he went outside for a minute to smoke a cigarette, and I put on one of the new records that he had brought over for us to listen to, and I noticed inside the sleeve for the vinyl there was a download. If you want to download a digital version of this album, you know, this is the code. So when he came back inside, I was sitting there listening to the record, and I said, hey, did you know that this was in that new record that you bought? And he was like, yeah, but I just don't give a shit. He's like, I already bought it on vinyl. And so he and I started to have this funny conversation about, like, again, like I was just saying a few minutes ago, you know, like I have like 5 DVD players, 5 Blu-ray players, 9 VHS, you know, like, and all of the laptops and everything and all the digital stuff. It's like, you know, I want everything to be available to me when I want it to be available to me, but I guess in a weird way, I want it to be available to me in various forms, just in case, I guess.
Well, it's like some people's like, I got to have the DVD. Why? It has extras that they didn't pour it over to the Blu-ray. And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, why didn't they? Because, you know.
Right? And
it's like the laser disc to Dawn of the Dead. It'll run you $250 because it has a different commentary than any of the other DVD or box sets.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Now you bring up fucking Laserdisc. Dude, I have a Laserdisc player, and the only reason I have the Laserdisc player is because I have the three original Star Wars movies on Laserdisc before George Lucas fucked with them at all. Just Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Boom. That's the only reason that I have a Laserdisc. And I do still find Laserdiscs sometimes at flea markets and in thrift stores. And I do sometimes buy ones, like I have Soylent Green and Apocalypse Now. But really the only reason that I keep the Laserdisc is because I want to be able to watch the original Star Wars films in their original form, you know. And they're Japanese.
Well, if you go into the gray market nowadays, you can get the Star Wars original films, and they're gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and guess what else has just popped up in the gray market? The Hateful Eight Roadshow version.
Ooh, oh, baby. You better get me a copy of that for my birthday. And by the way, my birthday was 2 weeks ago. you know how fucking envious I am of the fact that not only did you get to see the Hateful Eight Roadshow version in the theater, but you have the package, right? Like they gave you the
booklet, and there's a series of eight. One with each character. I got the one with Damian Bichon, Bob the Mexican.
Right. So was that a lobby card or just
the center poster of it?
Oh, okay. Because I when I saw Death Proof in the theater, they gave everybody a lobby card. You didn't get to pick which one that you got, but I got one of the lobby cards, you know.
I didn't get any of the lobby cards, but yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I think you told me. I do think you told me when you saw that they did have lobby cards available, right?
No.
Oh, they didn't. Oh, when I saw Death Proof, everybody who bought a ticket just got a lobby card, but you didn't get to pick which one you wanted. They just gave you whichever one was next on the pile. I got Stuntman Mike, so that's a cool, you know. And
yeah,
you know.
I was like, all right, I got the book. And in the way, I was like, oh, man, I wanted the Samuel L. Jackson one.
Right. No, but you know I am super jealous of you. All right, look. You just have to make me one promise. We've been friends for like almost 10 years now. You just got to make me one promise. If you know you're on your deathbed and you know things are coming to an end, you got to send me that. You got to send me that Hateful Eight. You got to be like, look, man, I don't know a bigger Tarantino fan than Nate Bradford. Make sure this gets to him.
It's how they did it. I mean, it was beautiful, the 70 millimeter, but the problem was is that most of the IMAX theaters was taken over by the Star Wars film when it came out.
Yeah.
So it only got into maybe 1/99th of the theaters he wanted to put it out in.
Yeah, and that's the thing about here. Like you get so much luckier because yeah, we have drive-in theaters up here, and we have some nice movie theaters up here that do 70 millimeter. And we actually have some really cool independent theaters up here that will show like old actual film, you know, like we were kind of goofing about before, but that will show actual film, like, oh my gosh, they're going to show, just name it. I don't fucking know. Breakfast Club or, Say Anything. They're going to be like, oh, they're going to show an actual like version of that on film. So we do have those films, those theaters that will do that stuff up here. But when it comes to something like you were just saying, like 70 millimeter, like a brand new 70 millimeter film, like The Hateful Eight or something, there will probably be, I'm going to say, 4 movie theaters within driving distance of where I live that will show them, and probably only one of them will show the movie, you know, like they'll just be like, we don't give a shit, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people, I've seen a couple of people look at the poster book, you know, the programs you got with it, and just look at it for like 3 seconds and boom, threw it in the bin. I'm like, what the?
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say? What the? Why weren't you picking those up and sending them to me? You know I'm a huge Tarantino fan. All right.
There's always like that. Like when I was a kid, we got the 70 millimeter version of creditless version of Apocalypse Now, the Roadshow version.
Yep.
I didn't watch it because I was 9 years old, but I knew it was the one where they didn't have no credits and they would just give you the book with all the credits in it instead of that being in the movie.
Right. Yeah. Another booklet that I really want is, even though I know he disowns it and it's probably my least favorite film of his, I would still like one of those booklets that they put out when they Dune, David Lynch.
The Dune dictionary version. I've never seen one of those in person.
No, neither have I. And I know, and that was kind of how we started talking about this, because you go to a lot more like film conventions than I do. I go to a lot more comic book and action figure stuff, but you go to a lot more film stuff. But that's not based on my desire. That's just like more what we have up here. We have a lot of comic book and action figure stuff, which is cool. You know, I mean, if you want to meet Frank, if you want to Miller and tell him that you used to think he was cool, but Matt.
Crazy.
yeah. You know, if you want to meet Frank Miller and say, hey, you used to be cool, but now you're a pro-Trump fascist who fucking sucks. But hey, man, Dark Knight Returns was still awesome. So, hey, thanks for Batman. Thanks for Batman Year One. I really loved that. But how much does it? What is it? $1 for a picture, $5 to punch you in your fucking fascist face. Okay, I'll pay the $5. I don't know. Okay, I'm sorry, Frank Miller, please do not take this as a direct threat,
unless you want to call in and curse us out, then do it. Yeah. Because we can use the publicity.
yeah Frank Miller, yeah, please. All right, if Frank Miller calls, we have 1 hour left on this episode. If Frank Miller calls and says that I can punch him in the face, I will not only meet him and punch him in the face, but we can do it on video, so we have something sweet for, you know, one of our other, like I said, we've got blogs, we've got websites. I will let Frank Miller punch me in the face if he lets me punch him in the face. I'm not saying it's going to be a one-sided fight. I'm not saying just show up and punch me in the face. And actually, Frank Miller, he looks kind of beefy. I don't know if anyone has seen me, but I weigh 148 pounds, and none of that is muscle. So Frank Miller, I hereby retract my desire to be punched in the face by you, but I would still like to punch you in the face.
But it's really sad with the Dune Dictionary, because that's how stupid they thought the people were.
Yeah, that's very strange to me, because I've always wondered if we could do a whole show on Dino De Laurentiis, right? Like, I mean,
oh God,
that,
yeah.
And I think he always underestimated his audience. Yeah. He always underestimated his audience, and Dune was always going to be a hard novel to, well, it wasn't even a single novel. I mean, you know, it was a series of books, but as far as I remember, and again, it's my least favorite David Lynch movie, so I do have a copy, but I've only watched it a few times in my life.
I have the steel book that has on one side of it the theatrical cut and on the other side the TV cut.
Right. But what I was going to say was that it's only based on the first book, right?
Yeah.
As far as I recall, I did read the books when I was younger, but as far as I recall,
yeah.
The David Lynch film was only based on the first book, which...
Yeah, they had contracts to do the first three books, but after the first one bombed so spectacularly, after cutting down David Lynch's original work print cut of 4 hours, which everyone, Paul Smith, McGill, and everyone has said that it was a masterpiece.
Yeah, I obviously, again, you and I both being film nerds, we've both heard about the legendary 4-hour David Lynch cut. I actually was just reading something on the internet the other day that said that the new Blu-ray version is going to have David Lynch's 4-hour cut.
I've checked the extras. It's just going to have the theatrical.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I kind of want to see the 4-hour David Lynch cut, but like the same way that I sat through Scorsese's The Irishman, I was like, all right, it's 4 hours. I like your movies, but come on, man. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, wrap it up.
Yeah, right? Like, David Lynch is one of my favorite directors. I love the stuff that he does, but yeah. Dune is probably my least favorite, but if I could get my hands on one of the 4-hour cuts of his original, yeah, I would watch it probably only once and then stuff it on my shelf with all my other movies, but I would at least watch it once. I would like to see what his vision of Dune was, you know. But it kind of rolls into something else that Abby and I were talking about. John dies at the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and here I go again. See, I never should have started drinking and doing drugs again, but who directed Phantasm?
Oh, Coscarelli.
Yes, he directed John Dies at the End, which, again, much in the vein of Dune, because the novel series of John Dies at the End is actually like a 3-book series, I assume that initially the studio's plan was to film all three books, but
Paul Giamatti and him had raised the money to do Bubba Nosferatu, the sequel to Bubba Hotep.
Right, right.
Because Bruce Campbell screwed him over and pulled out at the last minute, they shifted all of the money they had in stock to film Bubba Nosferatu over to John Dies at the End, and they did it independently.
Huh. Now that is a story that I've never heard. I know that, Coscarelli's last film before John Dies at the End was Bubba Hotep, which I think was a great film. And I'm actually personal friends with Joe R. Lansdale. So, I mean,
everyone who meets
super...
Joe R. Lansdale is personal friends with him.
he is such a nice dude. Isn't he such a nice fucking guy?
Yeah.
And like, not only does he hang out with you and shoot the shit, but then he makes friends with you on Facebook and Twitter, and he'll follow you on Instagram. He'll send you birthday wishes and shit. Like, dude, Joe R. Lansdale is not only one of the greatest writers of our generation, but he is one of the nicest fucking guys, dude. Let's give a shout out here to Joe R. Lansdale. He's a fucking awesome dude. He is such a cool dude.
But like I said, they had everything set up to do Bubba Nosferatu, but at the last second, Bruce Campbell said, "I don't want to do this," and pulled out and just sent everything into tailspin with that.
Huh. See, I never heard that story. I never heard anything about that. And it makes me feel kind of weird because, because we're just shooting the shit right now, obviously. I don't have anything to say. I can say I know Joe Lansdale and we're friends. That's fine. But I can't say anything about Bruce Campbell. I don't know I love his work, but I don't know him personally, so I can't say anything personally about him. But,
And they took the money and shifted it over to John Dies at the End.
Yeah.
John Dies at the End is a book, the first one, which is the one they adapted.
Yeah.
It was before... Holy shit, there's spiders in this book, I promise.
This book is filled with spiders or whatever. I can't remember what the second book is called. But yeah, but it was something like that.
But John Dies at the End is a dense book that they had to cut out of a whole lot of crap because, one, they didn't have the money to film it, and two, imagine doing a 3-hour film where John doesn't die at the end. He dies in the middle of the book. But then he comes back.
Right. Yeah. 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 This is the comparison I was trying to make, is that Dune was a very dense of a larger series of books, and John Dies at the End was the same. Ultimately, John Dies at the End is a trilogy of books, but we only got the first one. Both Dune and John Dies at the End, great, great film adaptations of great books, but probably not the most direct adaptations, you know what I mean? Like nowadays we've reached this era where filmmakers try so hard to just hammer in this was the book, boom, this is the movie, but
uncut version of the Dune that's hitting theaters in October is going to be 6 hours. So basically, we're going to get 3 hours, which is going to be the first half of the book up to the part where Paul first meets the Fremen. and that's where the first film's going to end. And then the second book is going to be after he's become one of the Fremen till the end of the book.
That's going to be the Paul Villeneuve version, though, not the David Lynch version, right?
Yeah.
Or are you saying there's... Yeah, that's going to be
no.
the Paul Villeneuve
yeah.
version. Yeah, not the David Lynch version. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, David Lynch has removed his name from that film so many times.
Yeah, the TV version is directed... Is possibly... the best film, one of the best films directed by Alan Smithy out there.
yeah, right, exactly. I was going to say, the Alan Smithy version, love it, love every minute of it. That's good shit. And I actually, I collect VHS. We talk about this all the time, but we were just talking about it earlier. The version of Dune that I have is on VHS. On the back of the VHS copy, it says directed by David Lynch, but when you watch the movie, it says directed by Alan Smithy. On the actual box art, it is a David Lynch film, but when you pop the film in, Alan Smithy. Yeah, it's Alan Smithy. I don't know how you say it. I don't know.
Alan Smithy.
Yeah, well, you're from the South. Up here, we say Smithy.
Well,
I grew up in New...
I just go from watching Siskel and Ebert and all of that, where they were the first ones to really ruin that secret.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, Alan Smithy secret.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
which was...
they do pronounce it. Yeah.
Which is, if you're a director and you're embarrassed of a film and you wanted to take your name off of it, the only thing that you had to use was the Alan Smithy name.
Yeah, and that's really weird. Like, how did that ever really, do you know how that ever came about?
I don't know. It's just that's what the Directors Guild decided the name was going to be. One of those arbitrary things, like instead of like when the ratings first come out, it was GGPM.
Right.
Then
yeah.
R and then X.
Yeah, it is a weird thing because I know there are a lot of rules when it comes to, you know, myself. Again, you know, we kind of talk about this sometimes here and there, but as someone who has written for movies, as someone who has written for TV shows, as someone who is a professional comedian and stuff, like, I do have to register with a lot of different guilds, you know, Directors Guild, Writers Guild. But if you put your actual God-given Christian name down on a piece of paper to register with a guild, whether it's in New York or Hollywood, the two major places where you have to register to be able to work as an actor, a writer, a director, a fucking cartoonist, a stand-up comedian, whatever you have to, you have to have a name that nobody else has. And if you don't, you just have to make up a name. They're just like, all right, well, there's already a Nate Bradford.
Yeah, like... William Goldman, I forget what name he took his film off of that he wrote, but he named it after his dog.
You're talking about William Goldman who wrote Lord of the Flies?
Wrote Butch Cassidy, The Sundance Kid, The Princess Bride.
Yeah. Yeah, what? Yeah,
and
what was
don't
the,
forget...
What?
I forget it, but he named it. He changed his name for the movie because he didn't like how the movie turned out. The writing credit was given to his dog, and it's the only time a dog's ever won best screenplay.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that. I can't remember what he changed his name to, but I was just going to say, you're right. His dog won an Oscar.
Yeah.
When you say William Goldman, though, all I can think of is Lord of the Flies, which was the novel that he wrote. But I do believe that it's the same William Goldman who wrote Lord of the Flies, that changed his name to his dog's name, and his dog won the Oscar. But I'm not 100%.
Cord Wiener Bird, who won an Emmy, was.
You tell me.
Harlan Ellison.
Oh, Harlan Ellison. What did you win an Emmy for? Must have been the Twilight Zone, huh?
Yeah, it was the Twilight Zone. He didn't like how they treated his story, so he changed his name to Cord Wiener Bird.
Which episode of the Twilight Zone did he win the Emmy for?
It was one of the 50s and 60s ones, not the 80s one.
Well, yeah. But was it the same one that they had to give James Cameron credit for when he wrote Terminator?
But that was Demon with a Glass Hand.
Yeah, Demon with a Glass Hand was the one that eventually they gave Harlan Ellison partial credit for.
He stole a lot of his ideas from Soldier and Demon from a Glass Hand. Cameron went up to him. He said, "Hey, I used your ideas. What do you think about that? Pay me."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't mind. I don't care. You know, like I said, man, we were talking about at the top of the show. We've been talking about this since the top of the show. We've been doing this together for 7 years, man, but you know me. I've been successful as a writer, a musician, a cartoonist, a stand-up comedian, an actor, a director. Like, I don't really give two shits. Everything that I have is out on the internet. So if anybody wants to see it, go see it. But, you know, if you use it, can I just get a few bucks? You know, like that's all I care about.
Yeah, I mean, I've never understood that how they treat most of the guys that work on the internet. They're like, you should be grateful that we're stealing from you. I'd be grateful if you give me like tons of more money.
Yeah, right. Like, look, man, you can go and listen to my podcast, and then you can post some stupid thing on your blog about my podcast, but if you're taking my ideas and Steven's ideas and putting them on your podcast, can we
making them your own and then telling people that they are your own ideas? Sooner or later, karma's going to come back and bite you.
Can we at least get 10 bucks? Because we spend like 40 bucks a month just to do this fucking podcast. If you're going to steal our ideas, can you at least just give us like 10 bucks so, you know, help pay the rent?
All I know, there's people online there that better pray every night that I can't afford a lawyer. That pray every night, please God, don't let Steve be able to ever afford a lawyer, because if he does, I'm ruined.
Right? Well, it's like I was saying before, like Abby teases me all the time, and she's like, yeah, how many cracked.com articles did you and Steven have to read before you came up with your ideas about whatever movies you're talking about this week? And I'm like, no, we're smart enough to figure out how fucking movies work. We don't need to read someone else's articles. And she's like, yeah, well, who's going to pay you when they listen to your podcast or read your blog and write their own fucking version of what you guys just said? I'm like, well, that's fair. I mean, yeah, she's right. it's so fucking stupid, man, that people would even like rip our shit off. But like you said before we even went on tonight, how many shows are we deep? We've been doing this for 7 years, man.
Yeah. And I'm on episode 591, headed straight towards 600 episodes. And that's not including the year that I was with Keith Hayes on Hoobazoo. And I forget how many episodes I did there. And the show I did before that, which is has some that you've on there, 3, that's on his site. I don't know how good they are to download because we can't get them downloaded.
Right? But, yeah, like
I've been doing this for over a decade. I was like 41, 40. I was like 43, 44 when I started.
Yeah, and we started off tonight's show saying that finally, after all these years, we've got some nice podcast equipment, and I've got good
internet finally. I live out in the boonies out here, and we're just now getting in the wired internet.
And we've had so much fun doing this, but again, it's not just the podcast. I mean, we've been doing podcasts for 7 years now, but we also have our blog, and we've like done so much writing and so much of this kind of nonsense together where we just goof around and talk about whatever we feel talking about on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, if you want to see my writing stuff, go to WK Books and look up most of the issues of Wings Chop, and you'll see Steve's Video Store, the articles in there that I've written.
Yeah,
and a couple of issues of Monster.
Yep, Wings Chop and Monster Sweet. If you want to see some more of Steven's writing, go to r-massive.com, where we had our blog over there for several years. It has to be r.massive, because if you just put r-massive, the first thing that comes up is a website about big dicks. So you got to make sure you put the dash in there. It's not an underscore. r-massive, and you'll find a lot of writing that Steven and I did but even before we started doing podcasts. That was back when we were just goofing around and writing articles, but those came out great.
Yeah.
They're still all there.
It was one of those things, like it was late night in a jail cell, and he's like, bend over, Steve. Why? <You'll> see. Can you move to the left?
Yeah, yeah. Look, I'm up there. I gotta go right. Okay, the right one feels okay. I gotta go left. Okay. All right. I got the right and the left. He's okay up there, folks. You know what? This is weird because we're talking about it now after 7 years. But like, how did we initially become friends? Because I was
doing my list on Facebook, and then you wrote up and he's like, hey, I like your list. And a couple of friends of mine were saying that I should team up with you, and would you like to do it? I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I think it must have been, yeah, it must have been like Tony Strauss, and yeah, those guys from Monster, and who else am I thinking of? Tony Strauss, who else was with Monster and Wings?
There's Tony Strauss, Brian Harris, and I forget. He's going to kill me. Tim Paxton. They're like the three head chief chili cheese fry makers of the bunch.
Yeah, no, and all three of those guys made friends with me on Facebook, and then you and I started working on our own blog, but it was inspired by the fact that those dudes were all cool with the stuff that you and I were doing. And back then, that was just blogs. That was before we were even doing podcasts.
I never really did a blog. I basically just did like a list on Facebook of obscure movies with barely things just attached them together, like string. It's like, okay. Right,
but then when you and I started doing the blog, talking about movies, that's when I don't know, you already knew those guys, but that's when I really became friends with those guys, was after you and I started doing the blog. Yeah, that's when those guys were like, okay, these dudes know what they're talking about when they talk about obscure, strange movies, you know?
Yeah. They were actually printed writers long before I started writing on Facebook. Tim Paxton,
right.
If you get the book Xerox, that tells about the 90s zine scene, he's one of the big head honchos of that. He was one of the big guys in that scene.
I do have a copy of that, and if everybody else out there, anybody else out there who's listening to the show tonight does not have a copy of Xerox Verox, you should get it, because it's friggin' awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the best books about the 90s scene, which is really what inspired all of us of my generation and Nate. We get stuff like Asian trash cinema, Indian trash cinema, shock cinema, video watchdog.
Ah, man.
It was
I just stepped up
from Fangoria.
Yeah, I have to say, just listening to you name those magazines, okay, it's very hot here in Maine tonight, so I'm sitting here in my underwear. When you started mentioning some of those magazines, I almost had an orgasm. I wasn't touching myself, but Jesus Christ. Ah, yeah, those are the and again, you and I have talked about this before. Those are the magazines we grew up on. Like, yeah. And I joked about earlier tonight about yeah, if you wanted to get a copy of Solo, you had to go to the store and buy a copy of Threat Theater, and then go home.
You knew someone that had a connection to New York Video.
Right. Yep.
That was the VHS company that put out the legit copies of Solo.
I think did I ever tell you the story about how I got my copy of Solo? There was a video store. I think I've told this story on our podcast before, but there was a video store near my house that was very strange. The guy who owned it was kind of a weirdo, but he used to travel out of state all the time. This is when I still lived in New Jersey. This guy would travel outside of state all the time, and he would come back with boxes and boxes and boxes of movies. And this is actually how I got a lot of my Something Weird video on VHS, a lot of my Wizard video. Like, he would come back from these out-of-state travels, and he would come back with these VHS tapes, and he would always let me look at them first, and I would buy a bunch of them. But I rented Solo. He had an old VHS copy of Solo, and I rented it, and I brought it back, and I was like, can I buy this? And he was like, no, this is super rare. That, again, remember, I had already bought a bunch of VHS copies of Something Weird, some wizard shit. Like, you know, I had bought a bunch of stuff, which now, with us, would be considered super rare, you know. But he didn't want to sell me the copy of Solo. So I took the copy of Solo home, and it was on VHS. The label on it was really loose, so I just peeled the label off real carefully, and then I just printed a copy off of my computer that said, you know, Solo, 120 Days of Sodom, glued it on with a glue stick, took a blank VHS tape back in the package. So I own an original copy of Solo on VHS that does not have a cover. It's in one of those old VHS like sleeves that you would get if you bought a bunch of blank VHS tapes.
and that guy's still looking for you.
So you say that, but the story's not quite over yet. The guy who was the manager at that video store, at the time I worked at a video store. And he was not allowed to rent brand new videos when they came out at his store. He would know that the new movies were coming out. He would know that Pulp Fiction was coming out on video, or Forrest Gump, you know, whatever. He knew. Oh, this is the week that all the Oscar contenders are coming out on VHS, so he would come to my video store, and I would be like, he'd be like, yeah, I can't rent Pulp Fiction this week because it's a new release at my work, and that was actually a rule at my work as well. We weren't allowed to rent new release videos, but I was the manager, so I just did whatever I wanted. But yeah, this guy Frank would come to my video store every Tuesday and be like, hey man, I can't rent Pulp Fiction today because it just came out, but I need to see it. I'd be like, okay, yeah, fine, take it. You know, and whatever. You don't work at this video store, so take Pulp Fiction. But years later, I worked as a delivery driver for a pharmacy, and I drive up one day, and Frank is the dude whose door I knock on, and I was like, oh, hey, man, I haven't seen you forever. He's like, well, you don't work at the video store anymore. And I was like, well, do you still work at the video store downtown? He's like, no, that store went full porno, so I quit. And I was like, all right, cool, man. I was like, well, I'll see you later. And as I was walking away, he was like, hey, tell me straight up, did you steal that copy of Solo? He was like, you were the last person to rent it, and when it came back, it was a blank tape with stickers on it. I still have that copy of Solo. And somewhere at a video store in Bangor, Maine, there's an empty box with a blank tape that has stickers that claim to be Solo.
Oh, Lord. But, yeah, I mean, back then I would, like, rent everything. And thank you to the NES because they would have the yellow, red, and white cables, which were useless for our TVs back then.
Yep.
But if you wanted to hook together two VCRs and Dupa-tape... Hey.
Yeah, the original copy of, again, I'm going to dip deep in, again, as anyone who's ever listened to our show, I'm a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. The first copy of Reservoir Dogs I ever had, I actually took home from work.
The live tape.
And, I just taped to tape, like you said, took some cords and just taped it. But this is funny, and I think I mentioned this, and again, I mentioned when I was promoting the show tonight that this is the first time that you and I have been back on the air together for since April, and I mentioned at the top of the show that was my fault because I do have
well,
some issues
too,
with drugs.
Well, mine too. I've been going through a lot of bull poop.
Right. Yeah, right. You can take
and
as
I'm
much
better
responsibility.
Off than you because I'm sitting outside and I live close to a lake and it's been raining all day, so it's cold out here tonight.
Yeah, it's been raining a lot here the last couple of days too. So it's not, I mean, I'm in my apartment with the air conditioning on and the heat, the heat outside is relaxed because of the rain. But, what I was going to say is the reason that I will take more responsibility for the fact that you and I have not been on the air together for the last, 4 or 5 weeks is because I do have drug and alcohol problems and I am addressing them. So I do thank all of our fans and, frequent listeners for at least giving me a chance to, you know, sober up a little bit and try to get my shit together. I feel weird about it, you know, because, like I said earlier, you know, it's like I'm almost 50 years old. You know, I have a nice house. I have a loving wife. I have two nice cars. I have all the fun toys you could ever want. You know, all of the
very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're not even kidding, man. Like, you know, like I have a really good job. She has a really good job. Like, we have a really nice house. We have all the fucking fancy shit you could ever want. We have, you know, there's a separation there where I understand that I do have problems with drugs and alcohol, but being almost 50 years old and having money in the bank and having a nice house and having a beautiful wife and having cars and a day job. And then you get to do podcasts with your friends and you get to do stand-up comedy and you get to write on your blog and you get to just like, you know, like it's fucking ridiculous. But when you get to a point where there are no consequences, like you totally, like I'm at the point where, you know, like I do like, I do have some really good friends who are in drug rehab programs, and they want me to go with them. And I do, I try it. A big reason why it doesn't work for me is because I'm not particularly religious. I'm a Buddhist. I believe in reincarnation. I do meditation. I was raised as a Catholic, but I don't believe in God. Sorry if that cuts our ratings, but I don't believe in God. I don't believe in Jesus.
Now we only have 22 people listening to us. We had 23, but the 23rd went, "Oh, screw this, I'm leaving."
Yeah. Someone was like,
"Come
fuck
back,
this guy.
23. I'll nail him to the cross for you. He likes that stuff."
But I do, I do believe in an afterlife. I do believe in a higher power. I just, and like I said, I was raised Catholic. So I just don't believe in the Christian version of the Bible. But when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have tried that several times, three times in the last 5 years. I've tried to get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't want to be one of those assholes who's like, "Oh, Alcoholics Anonymous is just another fucking cult. It's just like being a drunk." Like, I don't believe that. People find their way through Alcoholics Anonymous, and I support it fully. But the one thing that always resonates with me when it comes to AA is the Bill Hicks bit. Again, going back to me being a stand-up comedian, Bill Hicks saying, "I went to AA and the guy was like, I lost my house, I lost my car, I lost my dog, I went to jail, I lost everything. How does that make you feel about drinking, Bill Hicks?" It makes me feel like I never want to drink with you, you fucking moron.
Yeah.
I know
Cooper, he talked about, he's like, people called him up, "How did you stop?" "I didn't."
Yeah,
"Then how did you quit?"
I
didn't. "I just kept not doing it day by day by day by day."
Yeah, and that's a big thing for me, you know. And like I said, I don't want to take this over. Jesus Christ, man, we were supposed to be talking about 80s movies and music and all that fun stuff.
Well,
and we've got
I've
like
been
10
talking
minutes
about
left.
That. Yeah. The movie of the week for me is George Romero's The Amusement Park, which showed up Tuesday on Shudder. Jesus Christ, I feel sorry for the Lutherans because they wanted to get this film that was supposed to be an anti-ageism, you know, treat your elders better film. And what they got was one of the most downbeat, bleak, and depressing freaking films I have ever seen.
Yeah, you and I were messaging back and forth about it before the show tonight, and I have not yet seen it. But again, and this is actually it does kind of dovetail with what we were talking about. This is one of those films that you and I both have sought out over the years as just like film fanatics.
Well, I didn't know it existed. As soon as I knew it existed, I was like, when am I going to get to see it? Where is it going to be shown? When am I going to get to see it?
Yeah. Anybody who doesn't have a subscription to Shudder who wants to see it, this one movie alone will be worth the $5.99 that you have to pay because
last week on Joe Bob, he had Shot on Video Night, and it had his host Darcy, which she is a smart girl and a good fan, but she kept talking about, "Oh, I love Blockbuster. It was the greatest thing in the world." And I'm like, no, Blockbuster is really what killed the video store.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, again, like that, that's a whole other episode that you and I could do, even though that we shoot back and forth on it when we do our weekly podcast.
Yeah.
Like you and I grew up in a time where the video store was the thing. And yeah, I will agree with you that Blockbuster did kill off the video store ultimately. But I joke about this with my wife every week when you and I do the podcast. I always joke with my wife because she comes in and she's like, oh, you and Steven. I'm always like, yeah, but you can jump on. You know, we've got multiple microphones. We've got multiple headsets. Jump on to do something. And she and I have some very real, you mentioned Blockbuster now, but there must have been some like little mom and pop video stores in the town where you grew up, right?
Oh, like, God, yeah. Remember, I am 50, so I grew up during the rise of the mom and pop stores. The best thing about Blockbuster, I will give them, and you probably will too, is that it was the only place that you could buy 10 packs of the durable plastic VHS cases. They would sell them.
Yeah.
And not at a bad price. I think it was like 10 for 5.
right.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And you would get the good high quality boxes to store your VHS tapes in.
Yeah. Yeah, those clear ones that had the real real hard snap on them. I still have a bunch of those right here next to me while we're talking right now. Like my Something Weird video collection. I like that my Something Weird video VHS is one of my most prized things. I keep those pristine.
The Blockbuster cases like that, they were sunlight proof. If you've ever gotten video, bought it from a mom and pop store, there's a good chance that the front of the box is the paint's faded from sunlight exposure.
So I wanted to mention this. I wanted to mention it on the air. So I actually started my own podcast. I have not broadcast an episode yet, but I actually did start my own podcast. It's called None of These Things Are Mine. And it's going to be right here on Blog Talk Radio. And, I'm not sure 100% yet what night it's going to be on. Steven, you know, when you start a podcast, you have to, you know, you choose a night, you choose a time frame. I'm not sure what night it's going to be, but it's going to be me talking. It's going to be me talking about more about my life and some of these other things, but like you're saying, like Blockbuster video and collecting VHS tapes and stuff. And of course, after all these years, you are, when I get it all organized, you're going to be my first guest. In fact, I got a discount on my first month because of all the years that you and I have worked together on Blog Talk Radio. So,
hey, I did some good things. I got people by discounts. They better after all the money I'm giving them.
I know, right?
A list of how much money I gave them, I'd probably just quit this right now and just fall to the ground in a heap.
Well,
you mean
I
spent that much?
Well, that was kind of what I was thinking when I started setting up my podcast, and I saw that the first thing that was on there was like, well, you can get a discount code thanks to Steven Ronquillo. And I was like, well, shit, then he's going to be my first guest, and I mean, you're welcome for every show, but I just wanted to plug it a little bit. Like I said, it's still in early stages.
Well, if you wanted to, I'd do the producing and be the quiet one behind the scenes.
Yeah,
machinery with a pipe wrench. That's what
right?
I'm good
well,
at. Work. You work.
Right. Well, but speaking of which, I hope that everything came out well tonight. You and I both have some sweet headphones and some sweet new microphones.
Yeah.
So I think.
Well, besides your two vanishing things when you ran outside in your underwear and screamed that you loved the Tenet, you loved Inception, and that you loved the Guinea Pig. Yeah.
I didn't log off, but I went off to other websites because I was trying to look at naked pictures of your mom and stuff. So that's what really happened. And then, you know, the blog talk spun out. So I got dumped off and then I got back on. But
then you get a computer that will time you out after it's like energy saving mode.
But I think this does work okay. The Google Voice works okay as long as I stay on the page and I don't go look at naked pictures of your mom. I did, and it looked hot, but then I got kicked off, so I had to come back and dial back in. And then, you know what happened? I went and looked at naked pictures of your dad, and that really fucks things up. And then I went and looked at naked pictures of your dog, and that's when things were I heard her barking and it kind of turned me on.
And with that, good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah, we'll hopefully. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, sweetheart. When it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. When it's time to go. I hate to leave you, but I really must say. Good night, sweetheart. Good night. Good night, sweetheart. When it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. When it's time to go. I hate to leave you. I really must say. Oh, good night, sweetheart. Good night. Well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Baby, I just can't get right. Well, I hate to leave you, baby. Don't mean maybe, because I love you so. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you. I really must say, oh, good night, sweetheart. Good night,
sweetheart.
Mother. Oh, and your father. Like it if I stay here too long. One kiss.